I showed up with my keys in my pocket. That'll annoy me. We are beginning a new season in the church. It's called marriage season. And it begins this Saturday. Levi and Sam, you're still on, aren't you? I've done everything I can to talk them out of it, but they're going to go through with it anyway. And maybe I'll have my wife talk with you. I do a better job. Marriage has been a little rougher on her than it has for me. But they're getting married. And, as I've thought about marriage and the weddings that are coming up, I think there are at least four associated with this congregation coming up in the next 2 or 3 months. If they all make it to the altar, there's a big if there, but no, I'm joking. They've got too much money invested. But in any case, if they all make it, we'll have four. And I was trying to think about what life was like for me before I got married. We've been married now for 13 years. And to be honest with you, I don't know that I can really capture in my mind what it was like before I was married. It feels like I've just always been married now at this point in my life story. But I think that I didn't fully understand what marriage was like before I got married. How can you? I think I thought of marriage in terms of the piece of paper, thought a lot about the ceremony, thought a whole lot about the honeymoon, and then thought about moving in and starting sort of a life together. But the truth of the matter is I didn't fully comprehend, I think, that you have to have some ingredients if you're going to have a marriage more than the piece of paper and more than the shared house and more than the wedding. Because when you get married, that relationship is either going to make you one of the happiest people in town or one of the most miserable people in town. It's going to go one way or the other, and it's going to be based on the ingredients that you bring to that relationship. And when you think about that, again, if you don't have the right ingredients, it's just not going to work. I was talking to a friend a while back, and he's been married for many, many years, and around year 30 or 40 of their wedding, he was joking with his wife, sort of. He told her, he said, if I were to ever find another woman, I think we could probably divorce amicably. We could divide up our stuff. I could keep the house. And then we could divide up the cash and the assets. And I think we could find a way to work it out if we ever got divorced. And she looked at him and said, if we ever get a divorce, if you ever leave me for another woman, you're going to find out how much of this house you own. And I don't know if that was the best week of his marriage or not. I doubt that it was. But again, if you don't have the right ingredients, you're not going to have a very good relationship. And what's true of marriage and that relationship, I think, is true of my relationship and your relationship with God. I mean, you can have, I guess, I don't know, maybe you can't, but let's just assume that you can have a nominal relationship with God, where you point back to a time that you prayed a prayer and you can point back to your baptism and maybe you've made some form of a commitment and you would say that I have a relationship with God. Whether or not you can have this kind of relationship, I sort of doubt, but let's assume you can. You can still be a nominal believer, but not have a fulfilling relationship with God, not get strength from God, not have a sense of peace, not really have any of the benefits of it. I mean, you should be one of the happiest guys in town if you believe what the Bible says, if you've been forgiven, if you have peace with God, if He fills you with joy and contentment. You ought to be one of the happiest people in town if you're a believer. But you say, that's not me. I can't say that out of my relationship with God, I got a sense of great joy and peace that puts me in the top 5% in this town. And the reason is because the ingredients just aren't there. I want to talk to you about three vital ingredients if you're going to have a relationship with God that works. And this applies to marriage as well, wherever you are. But I want to talk to you about three vital key components, attributes, ingredients that need to be a part of your relationship with God. And if you're married, they need to be a part of your relationship with your spouse. The first ingredient that you and I have to have if we're going to have a relationship with God that meets any needs, that creates any sense of fullness in our life, is that we need to be dedicated to Him. There needs to be a sense of dedication to God. Look at Revelation or Romans chapter 14. Paul says, "For if we live, we live to the Lord. And if we die, we die to the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's." Paul had reached a place where he says, if I live, it's for the good of the Lord. If I die in my last breath, I'll be thanking the Lord. I don't have a Janet Jackson sort of relationship with God based on what have you done for me lately. He's done enough. He's blessed me. He bought me on Calvary. I belong to Him. If He never does anything for me again, I still belong to Him. If it cost me my life, it cost me my life. But I belong to Him. He belongs to me. That question is settled. I'm not in the world. I'm trying to maintain something with God. But I am free from that life. All things have become new to me, and I am dedicated to Jesus Christ. That question has been settled in my mind. You need to have that kind of a relationship with Jesus Christ. I was reading in the Old Testament where Elijah brings the people to the Mount Carmel, which was a mountain range, but he brings them to a place in Mount Carmel. And the people had left God. And he brings them and he says, bring all of your false prophets with you. And there are 850. And he said, we're going to settle this here and now. And he says to them in 1 Kings 18, when they gather them together, he says, how long will you falter or vary between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow Him. But if Baal is God, follow Him. And the people answered him not a word. In other words, he's saying, listen, how long are you going to worship God on Sunday morning and worship an idol on Monday? How long are you going to try to keep one foot in the world and one foot in the church? How long are you going to hug on Jesus on Sunday and hug that idol on Monday? How long are you going to hear sermon after sermon on full commitment and still not make a full commitment? How long are you going to dance this dance? Now, you can be like the squirrel that I met on Marshall Lane this week. And there he was. And he took three steps one way and two steps the other way and four steps one way and three steps the other way. And the road was wet and I didn't have time for his dance. I kept going and I heard a thud. And I looked in the rear view mirror and I saw all 4 feet up in the road. And I didn't feel guilty about it. That was on him because he was dancing in the road and I didn't have time to use my brakes. Elijah is saying, how long are you going to dance in the road? How long are you going to go back one way and then come back the other? How long are you going to serve God and cling to Him and sort of love on God and then come back over here and love your little idol, love your little materialism, love your job to the death, love this relationship more than you love God? How long are you going to go back and forth? When is there going to be some dedication in your life? It's interesting that when he says that, it says they said not a word. They didn't answer. And I take it that they didn't answer because they didn't know the answer. It's like, oh, we don't know. I can hear one of them saying to the other one, you know what? I thought this was going to be an inspiring church service. I thought we were going to hear some upbeat music today. I thought that he was going to offer us a word of encouragement to help our miserable little lives. We didn't expect to hear about commitment up here on the mountain today. Reminds me of a girl, and her boyfriend sit her down, and he proposed, and he said, I love you with all my heart. I love you more than any man in the world could love you. And I realize I'm not as handsome or as charming or as witty or as wealthy as Ralph Shipley. But I love you with all my heart. And she looked back and she said, and I love you with all my heart too. But tell me more about this Ralph Shipley. Here they are in the mountain and they're saying, I guess we love the Lord, but I don't know. Maybe we love Baal too. They can't make up their mind who they love. And here again is a prophet saying, you need to make up your mind. Are you in or are you out? It's interesting later on. In verse 30, after all the false prophets do their thing, Elijah says to all the people, come near to me. So all the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. If you read that too quickly, you miss something very important there. There had been an altar to the Lord that was built on the mount there, but it was tore up. The reason it was torn down is because it didn't get used anymore. Now, what was an altar? An altar is a place where you deal with sin in your life. It's a place where you make commitment to God in your life. And here they are. And whatever God they're serving is a God that doesn't require you to deal with sin or make a commitment in your life. Here they are. They have this religion. They have created their own religion that doesn't deal with sin or doesn't make a commitment to God in their life. It's not that they didn't have a religion. It's that they didn't have a religion that consisted of a commitment. And I want to say to you, there are some people listening to me. There are some people watching me, and you're like those people. You have a religion that doesn't need an altar in it. We have these altars here. And if I were to take these altars out, if we were to take these altars out, there would be stuff circulated in the church to remove me as pastor. These altars mean something to some of you, but many of the people who would sign the circulation to deal with the pastor never use these altars. They're just a piece of furniture to you. I've never seen you at an altar, and I don't think you got one at home. You have a religion that doesn't have an altar in it. You have a religion that doesn't really take sin seriously or make a commitment to God seriously in your life. And again, the prophet is saying, build the altar in your life. Make a commitment. Deal with the things that are preventing you from having the relationship with God. And they're not on his side, they're on your side. Dedicate yourself to the Lord. And then, secondly, if we're going to have a relationship with God, not only do we need a renewed sense of dedication, of commitment, but we need dependence on God. A sense of dependence. Look at Proverbs chapter 3. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. What's that saying? It's saying that you and I ought never get to a place where we feel we can do it. You and I ought never get to a place where we feel we don't need God. Regardless of how long you're in a relationship with God, there needs to be a sense in which you say, I can't even walk without Him holding my hand. I don't know the next step. I don't have the power in and of myself to live. I need God, and I need Him desperately. Every day that I live, I need the grace of God in my life baptizing me. There's never a place in my life where I feel like I can do it. That's what you need. You need to say what Paul said in Philippians chapter 1, where he says, essentially, God's not finished with me yet. I'm still a work in progress, and so I always need God at work in my life. You know, God will tell us frequently. Jesus will tell us frequently in His teachings that we need to be like children. And there are many ways in which you ought not be like a child. There are many ways in which we ought not be like children, because really, children are terrible little human beings, if you want to get down to it. They're lovable, but they're just terrible people. Children are not thankful. They are not thankful. Mine are 2 to 10 years old. I don't hear, well done, Dad. You're doing a great job. Thank you for providing for us. Thank you for bringing home food. Thank you for providing this home for us. Thank you for not leaving us. Thank you for not beating the snot out of us. And many times you could have. Many times we deserved it. You don't hear gratitude coming from kids. They're really self-centered little beings. I mean, it really is about them. Someone once said that if you got kids, you can't have nothing else. And that's true. I mean, they take over the room. They're like a vine spreading throughout the house. And I used to have my own room. Now I have my own corner of a room. And they take it over, and they mess up my Netflix account. And all you see are cartoons. And they you go in and sit down in your chair, and it's got chocolate milk stains in it from their partying all day before you got home, and they don't even clean it up. They really are little self-centered buggers. One of the things I like to do at my house is, our house borders a golf course, and I like to walk around in the evenings and collect balls. It really is like a grown-up Easter egg hunt. And so I like to collect balls, and then I take them home. When I get enough, I fill the sink up, I put detergent in there, I clean them. A lot of them are really sparkly, and I let my girls set up a lemonade stand right there on the golf course and sell balls. And most of their profit comes from the balls. And a couple of weeks ago, they made $52 selling mainly my balls. There was like 4 cups of lemonade that went out, but it was the balls. And Ava said, she said, I don't know why I feel guilty. I didn't do anything wrong. And I said, I tell you why you didn't feel guilty. Half that money belongs to me. Those are my balls. And if you want to deal with the guilt, I need a tax and a tithe off the balls. And she chose to live with the guilt. Really selfish of her, wasn't it? But that's children. They're not very thankful. They're not very, giving. They aren't really even very thoughtful. They live in make-believe land. I mean, you don't want to think like a kid. My boy is 2 now, and his big thing now is he says, I'm Flynn Rider. And he's a make-believe. Flynn Rider is the guy in the Rapunzel story. And the only reason he says he's Flynn Rider is because he don't have control of the remote. And that's the only guy in any story that he gets to watch, because it's all about princesses. So he's Flynn Rider, the guy. But they live in make-believe land. And so you don't want to be a kid in that way. So what is God saying? What is Jesus saying in being like children? He's saying, be dependent. You need to be dependent on me. One quality that children have is that they don't mind being dependent. And I don't know if that's a good quality or a bad quality, depending on how old they are. But at least when they're younger, they have a sense of dependence about them. And they don't care to be dependent. bring them in the room, show them your tax return and say, now the government says you're a dependent of mine, which means the government says you're not carrying your weight around here. And it won't concern them. They're not offended by that. They don't mind being dependent. And what you and I ought not mind is being dependent on God. We never need to say, listen, I can handle my recovery now. Now, every day I need God to help me say no to the things I ought to say no to. You ought not look at your marriage and say, I think we got this thing together now. I think we can do it by ourselves. No, you ought to be able to say, listen, if God doesn't help us, the love will go in this marriage. For me to love her like I ought to and for her to love me, knowing me like she ought to, we need the help of God. We need God to help us raise our children. We need God to help us every day of our lives. Our strength comes from God. So we need to be dependent. We need to be dedicated. And thirdly, we need to be delighted in God. Look at Revelation chapter 2. Jesus says to this church, these things says he who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks in the midst of the seven golden candlesticks. I know your works, your labor, your patience, and that you cannot bear those who are evil, and you have tested those who say they are apostles and are not, and have found them to be liars. And you have persevered and have patience and have labored for my name's sake and have not become weary. Nevertheless, I say this against you, that you have left your first love. Their spiritual resume was brilliant. It says that they had done many wonderful works. And the word there in the Greek to talk about their toils for the Lord means that they have worn themselves out. They have worked for the Lord to such a degree that they go home tired. And they are patient. They're not complaining about it. They work with patience. They work with the right spirit, with the right attitude. And they have the right doctrine. They test the false prophets. They cannot bear evil. They hate to see evil and injustice done, and they work against it. What wonderful people they are. But Jesus says, but I have something against you. You have left your first love. You don't delight in me anymore. You're too much like Martha and not enough like Mary. And he says later, he says, you need to repent of that or else I will come and remove my presence from your midst. What a wonderful resume. And oftentimes we say the reason we work so hard, the reason we contend for the sake of the gospel, the reason we stand for what's right is because we love Jesus. But Jesus is saying, no, you can do all of those things, but not delight in me, not love me. And I've always thought that it might sound a little harsh for Jesus to say to you who have done all of this stuff, it's still not enough. But again, the only reason you would say that is because, again, you haven't been married. Because I could see a woman saying to her husband, I thank you for working so hard for this family. I thank you for living right. And I don't doubt that you are faithful to me when I don't see you. I know that you are patient and you are forbearing with me. And you've done so much for this family. But I just wish that when you looked at me, you found me attractive. I just wish that you wanted to embrace me and hold me and spend time with me. I thank you for how hard you work for myself and the children. I thank you that when you come home, you're never grouchy. You're never unkind to us. I thank you that you are a person of moral character, but that's not enough for me. I want you to want me. I want you to hold me. I'd like to be kissed every now and then in the kitchen again. If you can understand that, you understand what Jesus is getting at here. He's saying, with all your work, with all the things you've done, with all the character that you have, with all the doctrine that you stand for, I'd like to see you hold your hand up every now and then in worship. I'd just like to see you adore me. I'd like for you to just take a day off and do nothing but get in contact with me again. I'd like for you to hunger and thirst for me again like you used to. I want to know that I'm the apple of your eye. I want you to be like David and long to just behold my beauty once again. You've done so much, but you don't delight in me anymore. And if you have today a marriage that isn't working like it should, it's one of these three things. If the marriage isn't working like it should, it's because there's not the dedication that there should be. There's not the commitment level that there ought to be. Or there's not the dependence on each other that there ought to be. How many marriages in Hollywood break up because they say we grew apart? She had her career, he had his career. They didn't see each other for months at a time. And at some point, there wasn't any sense of dependence on each other. They didn't look at each other and say, we need each other. And when the dependence was gone, the marriage hit the rocks. And then if you're going to have a good marriage, you have to continue to delight in each other. You have to do that. Now let me apply that again spiritually. If you're going to have a relationship with God, you have to be dedicated to Him. You have to make a commitment. You have to answer the question that Elijah asked, which is, how long will you waver between the world, between those idols, and God? How long will you go back and forth? You know, repeatedly in the Old Testament, God would tell Israel, you are adulterers. You are spiritual adulterers. And Jesus picks up that terminology and will tell his generation in Matthew 13 and 16, you are an adulterous generation. When you think of adultery, adultery isn't abandonment. Adultery doesn't mean you left your wife. Adultery means you're trying to have two things at the same time. Adultery means I want a wife. I want somebody to be home when I come home. I want her there. I want that relationship, but I want a mistress over here on the side. That's the essence of adultery. It isn't that I've abandoned somebody and taken up with another. It's that I'm trying to keep two of them going at the same time. And that's the essence of spiritual adultery. Spiritual adultery is saying, I want God. I want to worship Him on Sunday. I want His blessings in my life. I want a relationship with God. I want Him there for me. I want to be able to talk to Him and see Him working in my life. But I'd also like to have a little idol over here. I want this relationship that God says I can't have. I want to work and I want to spend my life chasing money and materialism. I want all this stuff over here, but I want God too. And God says you can't have both. You can't have both. Make up your mind who you're going to serve. And then recognize your dependence on Him. Never get to a place where you say you can do it without Him. And by all means, do whatever it takes to continue to delight in Him. Be a worshiping person. Be a praying person. Be a person who takes the time, as the old song would say, to be holy. Take the time to fall in love with Jesus. Helen Hayes was one of the great actresses, and she said, charm is that thing that if you have it, you don't need much else, and if you don't have it, not much else will do. And the Bible says that's true of love. If you love Jesus, if you love people, you don't need much else. But if you don't love Him, nothing that you bring to the table will do. Not all of your toils, not all of your works, not all of your doctrinal stances will make a difference if you don't delight in Him. So again, let me end where I started. You may stand, if you will. Elijah says, how long are you going to go back and forth between two opinions? How long will you go back and forth between two opinions? How long will you keep one foot in the world and try to put one foot in the church? How long? How long? We have altars here today. They are places where you can ask God to help you. You've got an issue in your life. We have a problem-solving God. And maybe you want to come today. There are also places that you make a commitment to God. You say, God, there's something in my life I haven't given to you. And I'm giving it to you now. Here it is. Here I am. Because I don't want anything to stand between me and you. There are also places where you can kneel and pray for other people. You can pray for this nation today. There are places that you talk to God. I pray that you will have a walk with God that has an altar in it. Let me pray with you. Father, we thank you for these people. And Lord, I look around this room and I see people who have been blessed by you. How good you've been to the people in this room. So many of them have enjoyed incredible health. I look at marriages that are functioning today. I look at children throughout this room that are healthy. Father, you have poured out your blessing in this room. And if you had given us none of these things, you sent your Son, Jesus Christ, to give his life for us so that we could live forever with you. That would be enough. Father, there's not a reason in the world why you should not have all of us, absolutely all of us, heart, soul, mind, and strength. Father, may in our hearts we offer ourselves to you as living sacrifices, poured out for you, ready to be blessed, but so that we can be a blessing. For those who are broken today, may you comfort your people. May you heal what is wounded. For those who grieve, may you dry their tears, we ask. For the glory of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.